There has been a huge increase in the value of real estate in most parts of this country in the last decade. And that has made the home a pretty significant part of many people's net worth, certainly those who own homes. Sometimes that is at the expense of retirement savings. So people rationalize it by saying, oh, well, I'll just downsize later. I'll downsize in retirement. Really? Really? Well, according to our next guest, seniors are no longer moving in droves. They're just not necessarily downsizing in the way that everyone thought that they would. So what does that mean for their financial plan? What does that mean for the housing market? Joining us now to talk about this retirement downsizing myth, his phrase, is Jason Heath, certified financial planner at Objective Financial Partners. Hello there.
Hey, Bruce. How you doing?
What does the data say about downsizing? Are seniors staying put? Are they saying, I'm not leaving this house until you carry me out in a wooden box?
To a certain extent. And I'll tell you what, I've been working with clients planning retirement for 20 years, and I write a lot of articles, and it crossed my mind that, you know, of all the people that I've worked with who planned to downsize, the number of people who actually downsize seems much smaller than those who plan it. So that's what got me digging into the research a little bit. And there was a good study that Ryerson's National Institute on Aging did back in the summer. And they asked people, I believe it was seniors over the age of 55, questions about living in their home and downsizing. And they found that 91% of people said they'd like to live safely and independently in their own home as long as possible. This was done pre-COVID, so there may be a little bit of a COVID impact on people's opinions of retirement and nursing homes, but certainly most people want to stay in their homes, according to that study.
Yeah, and certainly, you know, my parents are in their 80s. I am not super interested in having them move to a retirement living, like a group arrangement of any sort, right, given the situation that we're in now. Yeah. There are many implications. Let's start off by talking about the housing market, in particular in major centers where condos have become a more significant part of the housing mix. How mm-hmm. do seniors compare the cost of their, you know, suburban 3 or 4 bedroom home with the cost of moving to a tower or a townhome?
Sure. Well, I think there's a few different things at play. I know that anecdotally from you know, speaking to people, a lot of people say, geez, if I move from a house into a condo, I may not actually come out of it with money. I may be swapping dollars for dollars and may not come out ahead. And there was a Royal LePage report recently that found that the median price per square foot in Montreal, Ottawa, Greater Vancouver, Greater Toronto, so a number of different places across the country, condo prices per square foot were significantly higher than that of single family dwellings. And in Toronto, for example, the median price per square foot for a condo was about 53% higher than per square foot of single family dwellings. So, you know, the data seems to support that selling a house, moving into a condo doesn't necessarily mean you come out of it with money. And I've found a lot of people are very hesitant to pay condo fees as well. So there's a few different deterrents, I think, from people actually making the move and doing the downsize.
And this is really important from a financial plan standpoint. If you're relying on some of that equity or a good chunk of that equity to put groceries in mm-hmm. your fridge, we'll talk about reverse mortgages in 1 second, but there's mm-hmm. another idea before that is selling and signing a long-term lease agreement. How does that actually work in practice?
Yeah, it's I think it's kind of interesting. I've seen a few people that have done this sort of thing. And basically the idea is you could consider listing your house for sale, but not for the purpose of selling it and moving into the expensive condo or moving out to the country. You could list your house for sale with the condition that you want to lease the property back. And particularly on a long-term lease, sell the house, sign a 5-year lease. You're going to limit the number of people who are going to want to buy the property because you're only going to be looking for real estate investors, but it could work out really well for the right investor who wants to have a good tenant, who's lived in the property, who's going to take care of it, who has a bunch of money because they just sold their house and is probably going to be able to make rent. So it's certainly an option to consider. You want to make sure you've got proper advice from a real estate agent and a lawyer, but I think there is certainly the opportunity to list your house for sale and offer it on a long-term lease that you'd like to immediately lease it back at the same time.
We've talked about reverse mortgages on this show a number of times. My starting point is no. My starting point is no is because they're more expensive rate-wise, and there's some real admin complexity and some constraints that are very worrying to me. Make the case for yes. What are the very specific cases in which a client would come to you and you'd say, you know what, I think this makes sense for you?
Yeah. Well, look, I agree with you. My starting point with reverse mortgages is usually no, and let's look at the other alternatives. Not everybody wants to sell or downsize or sell and lease. They just want to stay in their home and keep it simple. When you are working and you've got a good income and you can afford the payments, banks love to lend money. We've seen a lot of that recently. But when you're retired and you no longer have an income, banks are much more hesitant to lend money to people. Particularly, the optics are really bad of having to foreclose on a home and kick a senior out. So banks are much, much more hesitant to lend money to people on a mortgage or a line of credit. So I've seen cases where people have basically reached their ability to borrow money from a traditional bank, where a reverse mortgage is the option to be able to take money and take equity out of the property to stay in the property. And a lot of the traditional arguments about, oh, well, you know, reverse mortgage and you borrow the money, it reduces the amount of your inheritance or the money that you leave to your kids. Well, so does selling the property and spending the money. So both result in you reducing the amount of an estate that you leave. I think it can be a short-term option for somebody who wants to buy a little more time in their home. But again, I think it's a last-term option. You explore other options first.
What are the conversations that seniors need to be having with their kids and with their financial advisors, if they work with someone, about this downsizing question? What are the two or three critical things that need to be communicated to those two groups of people?
Good question. I'd say that as far as conversations with financial advisors, one of the things that I like to make sure people understand when they're planning for retirement and trying to figure out how they're going to cover all their expenses in retirement is trying to determine to what extent they might need to tap into home equity. And part of that is just so people can get their head around it and try to figure out, okay, if and when am I going to need to sell my home for financial reasons? And the earlier you can determine that, I think the earlier you can start to think about different plans for retirement funding. Conversations with kids are tough. I find more often than not, it's the other way around. It's the kids initiating conversations with parents. It's kids saying to mom and dad, hey, you know, you shouldn't be up there putting up Christmas lights or, you know, shoveling snow, or, you know, the farm is getting to be a little too much for you, mom and dad. So a lot of times it's the other way around. And I think that the children of seniors need to consider diplomatically raising these things with mom and dad to have the conversations, because there's a lot of practical reasons beyond money that somebody should consider a move.
Oh, so you're saying you shouldn't just show up on a Saturday, pack up the kitchen and take it and put it in your car? That's bad. That's not the right approach.
Not going to go over that well, you know?
Yeah, so, I don't think that.
And,
okay.
And I think the other challenge too is that I've experienced this firsthand personally and professionally, that the more time that goes on, the older you get, the more difficult it becomes to envision a move or a change like this. And I've seen people who've said, oh, just so much work and got to pack up and have to do these renovations. And the longer that you put it off, the harder it may get to do it in the future. So I think some of the more successful retirees I've seen downsize have been those who've done it long before they need to, and not because they have to, but because they choose to. It's a proactive approach rather than reactive.
Right.
And I tell you, when I'm working with people who are much older and smarter than me, I'm taking notes. I'm trying to figure out, how am I going to retire? How am I going to do things as I get older?
Yeah.
And certainly that's a lesson I've learned.
Jason, thanks very much.
Always a pleasure, Bruce. Thanks for having me.
Jason Heath is a certified financial planner at Objective Financial Partners, and he was here to talk to us about this whole idea of seniors downsizing. Will you or won't you? How does that affect your financial plan?